Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
And we are turning our attention, whether reluctantly or not, to back to school now. And when students head back in a few weeks or a few days, depending, they're sure to learn about math, English, science. One thing that's not guaranteed, though, is sexual education. Massachusetts does not require sex ed in schools, leaving decisions about whether and what to teach to the localities. So with the overturning of abortion rights earlier this summer by the Supreme Court, however, some have wondered whether better sexual education could help avoid unwanted pregnancies in a post-Roe world. So we wanted to dive into what is being taught in schools. What is the state of sex education in Massachusetts? With us now to talk about that, Megara Bell, who is director of the organization Partners in Sex Education, which works with local school districts on developing and teaching sex ed in classrooms. Megara, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me here.
So let's start with how it works in Massachusetts now. First, did I give a fairly fair summary there?
Absolutely. And Massachusetts is one of the few states in the nation that has no requirements around sexual health education whatsoever. Additionally, health education is not required. And so all of the topics within health education, which should be taught to all of our students in all grades, are often missing. So many schools have health, many schools do not. And that's usually the context in which sexual health topics would also be taught.
Okay, so I want to understand how much of an outlier the state is. In general, states across the country, do they both have requirements that it's taught and standard curriculum? Are we an outlier on both of those things? Or is it more common that it's required that it's taught, but the curricula are left to localities? Do you understand my question?
Yeah, so it's very, very mixed, and I can't do justice to how complex it is. I will say that a great resource to anyone who's interested in what individual states are doing is a Guttmacher, which collects data about all kinds of things, including sexual health education and reproductive rights. So many states require either topics within sexual health education, or they require HIV education, or they require that if a school system decides to teach it, then it has to be up to certain standards. Some of them have requirements that are not great. There are requirements about what you are not allowed to talk about, right? So what people refer to as the don't say gay bills. At least Massachusetts doesn't have that. But in fact, it's a bit of the Wild West. So there's no requirements or standards whatsoever. Now, there are health frameworks put out by DESE, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Those, however, haven't been updated since the 1990s, where every other topic, you know, in mathematics and language arts and, every topic that you would think of in school has standards that have been updated within the last 5 years. Health education, which includes sexual health, is an outlier in that we're still working with 90s frameworks.
So for example, I mean, the landscape of treatments, outcomes, prognosis, et cetera, and HIV/AIDS since that time is massively different. So nothing there, for example, has been updated since the 1990s.
Absolutely. So unfortunately, that's a great example, which is HIV is often still taught as if it was the 90s, right? It's very much that you will get HIV and you will die kind of language, which is not at all with our current scientific understanding about how this works and how prevention works.
Okay, so we are talking about the state of sexual education in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts here. And what triggered it for us, Megara, was the change in status, the constitutional protection of abortion, which the Supreme Court earlier this summer removed. Megara Bell is the director of Partners in Sex Education, which works with local school districts on developing and teaching sex ed in classrooms. And we've established that here in the Commonwealth, there is no requirement, standardized requirement, that sex ed be taught or how sex ed be taught. So I'm going to put in a little data here. According to the data from the CDC, and this is for the 2017-2018 school year, roughly 91% of Massachusetts high schools taught about the benefits of being sexually abstinent in a required course. Under 80% of these same schools taught how to correctly use a condom. Just over 86 taught about other methods of contraception other than condoms. So given you've said it's a Wild West, so I am assuming then that that means that we have not even, what's the word I'm looking for, converged across our school districts on some common best practices. Is that right? Or are there some things that pretty consistently in the Commonwealth you can say 10th graders are going to learn X, and 7th graders are going to learn Y?
Sadly, you can't say that. We have coalesced on what best practices are. The field of health education and folks who teach specialize in sexual health education are very clear about what the standards are. There are national sex ed standards that are laid out for age-appropriate ways for all grades, from grades kindergarten to 12th grade.
Okay, so let's take a second there. And this is not an exam for you, but just to give our listeners some examples. So a best practice that would be considered a standard best practice for educating in sex ed for a kindergartner is one thing.
So exactly. So I mean, this is important because people often don't understand what age appropriate means, right? So in a kindergarten, we're really worried about their safety. We want them to understand how to communicate. We want to understand that their bodies are their own. And we want them to understand how to report to an adult if they're in a situation that's making them uncomfortable. So that's a safety thing. We are also concerned about sort of the beginnings of bullying. We want them to understand accepting differences and being kind. And sharing. I mean, some of those basic skills of kindergarten to first grade. Those are what would be in the umbrella of a relationships and sex education.
Okay, so fast forward to fourth grade. What, for example, is different in how those best practices would apply in fourth grade?
Great example. So third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, fourth grade, perfect example would be puberty. I would put right at the top of the list of the things that we need to talk about, right? Kids' bodies are changing. They're changing fast. And those are creating situations that they're not always able to understand. They just need to know what to expect, how to take care of themselves, hygiene. Like, a lot of those things would be very, very important. But, and they have different ways of, negotiating friendships and different things that we're worried about with their safety. But I would put, like I said, puberty education at the top of the list. So some schools are doing that, right? Some schools just doing puberty education, but they're not covering anything else. Some schools are not doing that, and they're just doing what you would think of as in the high school sex education. So they're doing like pregnancy prevention, STD risk reduction. They're doing talking about intimate partner violence, right? A high school age-appropriate topic. And they're totally skipping some of those earlier grades. So it's very different from age to age, from stage to stage.
All right. So that's very helpful also in the types of categories. So this is everything from self-protection to bullying to physical development through adolescence to actual conversations about sex, sexual activity, pregnancy prevention, STDs. There's a full gamut here.
Absolutely. And across the board, I would say that how health education has really gone is to a skills-based format. So we're not just, putting information onto, piling facts into them. Really what we're teaching them is to some skills like how to access information, right? And how to make decision making, goal setting, those kind of things. And so again, those are different from age to age, but in terms of health goals, how to make improvements to their health, all of those kind of things are really important for health education and for sexual health education.
Okay, so we're having a conversation about the status of sex education in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts as everyone prepares to go back to school this year. Megha Rabel is the Director of Partners in Sex Education here to talk to us about it. I'm going to bring in some sound. Yesterday we spoke with Andrew Beckwith, who is the president of the Massachusetts Family Institute, about sexual education. MFI has come out against statewide control of comprehensive sex ed, and there have been some bills over the last few legislative sessions seeking to create laws around comprehensive sexual education for the Commonwealth. And Andrew Beckwith instead advocates for staying with the local control model that we have now. Here he is.
We would like to see local schools really communicate with parents about what everyone can be comfortable with, or what the vast majority of parents can be comfortable with, and how to accommodate those families that aren't comfortable with certain types of sex ed, and find a sex education paradigm that is not based on, just prophylactics and promiscuity, but one that teaches the fundamentals of human anatomy and reproduction, but doesn't spend years of essentially graphic pornographic in many cases, material promoting non-reproductive acts.
So I want to be thoughtful in how I frame the follow-up question to this, because there is in here this tension on a number of levels. One, perceptions versus research on whether or not covering specific topics in sexual education does or does not then drive sexual behavior, especially among adolescents. And two, the tension between standardization and best practices and comfort levels by individual families about what their young people are exposed to. I imagine that's something that you think about thoughtfully as an educator. So how do you address those tensions, those perceptions, those needs for family autonomy, and also think about what we know from the research produces the healthiest outcomes for kids?
Right. So great question. So the overwhelming majority of Americans believe that public schools should be providing needed health education, which includes information about sex, about relationships, about puberty, and pregnancy and STD prevention, bullying, all of those topics. Overwhelming majority of Americans, of parents, of students believe that this is critically important expectation for the public schools to provide. And there's also built into this, right, there's some differences about some of the topics or when it's age appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. But we are all following the national standards in terms of which are well thought out. I mean, I think one of the problems is conflating, like I said, what's happening in high school to what's happening in younger grades, right? So I talked a little bit about the different topics. And one of the issues, so in Massachusetts, for instance, any family caregiver has an option to opt out of these classes, right? So we do give folks choice on whether they want to do this in school or in out of school. And one of the things that people say on all sides of this is like they want to have those conversations at home, which I 100% support. As much as we, the schools and the culture, can be supporting parents in how to have conversations at home in addition to what's happening in school, that's fantastic. But the problem is it's an overwhelming amount of people want a comprehensive, inclusive sexual health education that covers all of these topics. And when you have a handful, a small group of people that are attempting to limit all families' access to these very important topics, that's a problem. You can opt your child out, but then to impose your ideas on all the other families who want this is unfair and un-American.
So I do want to note just some research that demonstrates that while abstinence is a surefire way to prevent pregnancy and avoid STIs, sexually transmitted infections, research, including some widely cited from a 2017 study in the Journal of Adolescent Health, shows that abstinence only until marriage programs often fail at preventing young people from having sex. And that's data I wanted to bring into the conversation. So in our last 30 seconds, and it is 30 seconds, what's the balance that you want to see? Would you like to see standardized sex education across the state or just a wider embracing of best practices?
I would say that the schools want to provide the best thing for their students. They know what's best, and we want to allow them to do this. We want by having some state standards for them to follow.
All right. That is Megara Bell, who's director of the organization Partners in Sex Education, works with local school districts to develop and teach sex ed in classrooms. I learned a lot from you today. Thanks for taking the time to come in.
Thanks so much for having me.